This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
875. It is podcast 875. You realize this year is the 10th year anniversary of us doing this podcast? We started in, I think it was like August-ish of 2014.
It's never good to look back in retrospect.
I think it can be great.
I just was looking back to the last live podcast that I was on, and I was wearing the same shirt. Good news, hey. I've done laundry since then.
Well, the good news is you actually still like Porsches, and no one's shocked.
I do.
So that's happening as well.
Hi, guys. I like Maseratis.
That's very true. If you haven't seen all of our Maserati content, there is actually most of the Maserati stuff is out now, but there is one more coming, and that is the MC20 test drive where we're riding the car together. That's coming this Sunday. Mm-hmm. But you've probably seen our Be Italian Maserati Fiat 124 piece on the main channel. It's not a comparison.
Not a comparison.
And then we also did the Grecale and the GT on test drive as well. Of course, test drives are continuing to be right here on this channel every Sunday. We do some POVs. It just depends on the car and what we have for schedule. Those are continuing weekly. And then our main channel is right now about every 3 weeks. We got a big piece.
Something like that.
We're in this...
Depends on car availability.
Yes. You guys have to also know that this quarter of the year, the first quarter of the year, is the hardest quarter for us to get anything done for the main channel.
Yeah,
it is. Because everything dries up as far as car availability, like after Thanksgiving, and then we get dumped on for snow, so we can't shoot anything here. So getting something in enough time to really feed this part of the year is hard. I wish I could tell you guys all of the stuff we have going on for the second half of the year that we are so excited about, but we're getting there. Lots of good questions. Before we get into those, hi, guys. Thank you, as always, for joining us on a live podcast. We should do a couple of announcements.
We should.
Because you and I now, we have that thing called Hooked on Driving. We're trying to get you guys on track, and we hope you'll join us. There are three big 2-day events coming up from Hooked on Driving. We want to really promote anytime any one of our franchisees or the home office in NorCal is doing a 2-day event. If you're in Southern California, 2 days at Willow Springs, the 2nd and 3rd of March, that is this coming weekend. There probably is still space available. Our franchisee, David, down there in the Southwest region has got that event going on. 2 full days at Willow. I've heard, I can't confirm, it's been repaved, which it needed to be repaved.
The ring's getting repaved. Mm-hmm. That's all new. Lots of stuff's getting repaved.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
There's also Virginia International Raceway VIR. That is the VIR season opener, March 7th and 8th, 2024. So thanks to our franchisees there. They are actually a collaboration, the North and the South. Well, I guess
Mike and Mona, who do the Northeast, and Steve, who does the Southeast, are all working together on VIR. It's going to be a very cool couple of days.
Yeah, that will be a great event. And then there's Laguna Seca coming up March 9th and 10th. That is a 2-day event with 103 decibel sound limit, and including garage rentals. And Todd and I are coming out for the event.
We're excited.
It's going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. It'll be our first actual attendance at an event as new owners, which is very exciting. We want to see everybody, see how it runs. So if you're in the area, if you're local, we'd love to see you come out. But we are going to do this and continue announcing various events around the country as we get to things. We've got some travel to do on the East Coast and go out and see our friends out there, our franchisees.
Absolutely. It's going to be great.
We need to get around the country and go to various events. So we'll keep you posted via the podcast, of course, social media as well. But right before we jump into our today's questions, good news, everyone.
Oh, no.
The McLaren Artura Spider has been announced. We just got the press release.
Yep.
It is being revealed as McLaren's first ever high-performance hybrid convertible, adding a thrilling new dimension to the Artura and McLaren supercar range.
Which basically, what you guys need to understand by Paul sharing this is he's already on the phone with our McLaren contact trying to figure when we can get one. Yeah. That's really what that means. That's why he's announcing it, because he really is completely distracted at this point.
They've bumped the power 20 brake horsepower, so it is now making 690 brake horsepower, but for everyone who owns the coupe, McLaren will provide free of charge that 20 horsepower bump to your coupe, so it will match the new Spider, which is a one-piece retractable panel, and it actually looks really good. I'm not a convertible guy very much, but it looks really good.
A good hardtop convertible is awesome, and basically it's all just software anyway, right? So we're going to have that happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you should jump into questions. Thank you guys for posting up. We've got some on social media, which we need to get to.
Yep.
And then I say ask away all your car questions.
James Cardi on X actually asked, Elantra N or GR86, which Then he gave the rest of the discussion, and it becomes really obvious. He said, this is just about which one is more fun. He doesn't need a car with utility. He can use his fiance's Corolla. If you're just buying for fun, GR86. I mean, I love the Elantra N, but get rear-wheel drive, get lighter. That, just go with that. That's the easy answer there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're celebrating the new year with new products from our friends at Griot's Garage. Wintertime means you might be stuck inside, but you can still clean your car with the Ceramic Rinseless Wash. It lifts dirt, grime, and contaminants and leaves behind a ceramic shield that enhances water beading and self-cleaning ability.
But if you're getting out the hose, Griot's now offers car wash pods. Just like the pods you use for a clothes washer, drop one of these in your wash bucket for the perfect amount of soap. These car wash pods even work with foaming sprayers and foam cannons too.
Or if your winter project has faded trim, and many of them do, try the Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer that renews those old trim pieces and is even good for tires. Plus, there's plastic all-in-one to remove fine scratches and swirl marks and restore dull plastic surfaces.
Just remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed and all liquid products are made in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything on your order. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. Bella B, 1029 on Instagram, says, maybe a topic Tuesday, but what are cars that we find ourselves suggesting older generations of, like 911s or M3s or Minis? Yes is the answer to all of those.
I was going to say, there's a good list. It's a good start.
Man, yeah. I really do feel like, especially now that we're observing HOD track days and HOD attendees, those cars are becoming more and more valuable to keep running, but those are going to be turned into track cars or the dual purpose kind of thing. But everybody wants a manual transmission. Although I have been seeing news articles, I can't pinpoint a particular article right now, but I've been seeing news about manual transmissions and how customers are continuing to buy manuals. And that is making OEMs wake up and say, okay, clearly this hashtag save the manuals thing kind of worked and you guys aren't done buying manuals. So we'll keep doing a few things. And I'd like to see all of our manufacturers continue to investigate because it does add such a dimension. I mean, the Artura Spider is not, which is kind of a bummer.
Nor will it be.
But if it were, McLaren, I'd bet you your sales would go up.
That's very funny. I mean, this is the thing, and I'm going to keep beating on it. We've said it forever. The only way manufacturers keep making us these kind of cars is we have to buy them new. We all, and I'm pointing the finger at myself, we all like to rage online about make more manuals, but we're only buying used cars. If nobody's buying a new manual, then the manufacturers can't see the benefit of those development dollars. I'm glad that it's happening at least a little bit. That's something we have to keep doing. Somebody's asking about this Fellowship of the Nürburgring shirt. I love it. And shout out to the fan who actually made it for me and handed it to me at a meetup in the East Coast. It was awesome. It was totally unexpected. I do love it. I wear it every now and then. It's just a blending of the parts of my life, and it makes me laugh. And unfortunately, it's not one that we sell. If that fan would like to send us the art with the approval to make it, we will make more. But I'm not going to make that assumption until that happens.
I was just traveling after some business travel that you and I had. We were doing some winter driving in GR Corollas. I stopped to celebrate my dad's birthday. He's currently watching. I love him very much. So happy birthday, Dad. I got to, on the same trip, drive my brother-in-law's Saab 9.5.
Oh, this is his new one.
The wagon.
Oh, no. Yeah, the Saab collection
Turbo
continues. Yes.
Goodness. Mm-hmm. And he let me drive it. He's put brand new tires on it, which is fantastic. Good. And it's actually really well sorted. It turned 122,000 miles. This is the one he bought in Anchorage from an owner up there, had it shipped down the coast and took delivery not too long ago. He is thrilled. And it's just, he let me kind of get into it. And so we did. And I don't know why everyone doesn't love wagons. It's just a cool wagon.
So wagons are cool.
I do like it a lot.
He found a really, really clean one in red. Nice. It is the right spec. As much as we make fun of your brother-in-law for his Saab love, it is the right car. He did find something very cool. Did you outdrive him in it, though? Did you drive it to the point where he was like, well, I haven't driven it like that yet?
I'm not sure. He didn't mention anything.
Probably.
But
probably,
Got to Get Outside on Instagram asks, how do you know when it's time to let go of your beloved sports car that doesn't get driven enough? Mm. And Daniel, my brother-in-law, we're talking about this very thing on the recent drive, actually today, and talking about, well, what about my nephew's Saab 9.5? Sorry, 9.3. Daniel says the 9.3.
I was going to say, I thought it was the other way around.
It is the other way around. I'm not quite used to the Saab nomenclature. Still
the
working on my
Saab. The 5 is bigger than the 3.
The 5 is the older one.
Your brother just got the 3. Yeah.
1997 car.
Insane. Yes.
But now he doesn't want to let go of any of them. And I said, you don't have to, what you and I've talked about, you don't have to dislike that car to get rid of it. Maybe something comes back in your life at some point, but you don't have to really be done with it to get rid of it. So got to get outside. I know that you're recognizing it's not getting driven enough, and that's a bummer. Changes happen in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Time has to be reallocated to new activities.
Yeah.
We totally get that. However, if it's not being driven and you don't foresee a point where your current activities will end to go back to driving your sports car, it's okay to sell it. Maybe something will come back in your life. But most of all, look at it as an opportunity to bring something new into your life when you are ready again.
Do you see Beaker's Garage? Only you can answer this question. The 981 came in with sports seats. What's the best way to improve seat comfort for a cross-country trip? I don't feel like you've had issues, but what are your thoughts?
I actually haven't. We've done quite a few road trips. I've taken it on our Utah adventure quite a lot, and I've always been great. They're the base seats. They're the sports seats, but they're the base for the GTS. I suppose a small pillow in your lumbar, that's the first thing that goes. It's not lateral support. It's always lumbar in your mid to lower back. So just take a small pillow and jam it down in there. But another good thing is to do a rolled up t-shirt, or if you've got a hoodie, you can take your hoodie off and jam it down back there. And it definitely eases the loins.
So is this why billionaires wear hoodies? They're having lumbar issues in their really high-end car with the crazy doors, and so they take the hoodie off and they fix the lumbar?
Maybe, but they can afford to just have the seats redone.
They can just new seats.
Get rid of the car and get a car with better seats.
Something with different seats. I totally agree with that. That's an excellent good point.
Jorge asks, if we can please pronounce Porsche as if it were Versace.
Versace. That's what Nick did on the video we released today. When we did Price of Fun, Nick just walked around and did all these little snippets, and that was my favorite one by far. I had to post the day because we were talking about questions and us making up answers, and we were making jokes about that. Minty has said, hey, howdy guys. Hello back. He says, recently got a job as a salesman for Chevy. Wondering what we think about the Chevy lineup, if anything stands out to us. I think the Blazer in RS trim is better than we expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
The Camaro, it's too bad it's going away.
Mm-hmm.
The Corvette is great across the board, full stop. Doesn't matter what trim you get.
They need a lightweight T version,
Stingray
T.
That would be nice. And the, you know what? Nobody out Suburban's the Suburban.
That's a good
just
point.
And honestly, I think the two real things that are the jewels in the crown of Chevrolet across the board are the Vette and the Suburban. They kill both those areas.
You're right. Just wipe away all the other brands, and it's the Suburban company and the Vette company. I actually saw my first Fisker Ocean on the road driving back from the airport today, but I thought it was a Buick. I was coming up on it.
That makes sense.
Is that a Buick?
That makes sense.
Fisker
Ocean.
There's one. It was clearly a test drive, and I kept my speed around a corner. I was driving the Expedition, by the way.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah.
Kept my speed, and that thing needs momentum, but he saw me coming and just
put it down.
I was like, great. Thank you for,
having power.
I've got to keep my momentum.
Nobody expects the fact that you and that Expedition are going to be that good around corners. In fact, here's a related question. Club Racer, thank you, man. He says, can we weigh in our feelings about the C8? We'll be sad to see it go. It's still around. It's actually around through a big road trip coming later this year. We'll be sad to see it go. It didn't place well in the Price of Fun piece. He doesn't feel like we recommend it much. What is the use case for it? There's been a lot of really good questions about the C8 in relation to our Price of Fun piece, because I want to come back to the Price of Fun video, which is on our main channel right now. It's the $30,000 GR86 to the $300,000 McLaren Artura. It's five cars in there. And I want to also reiterate, those five cars are not the definitive five most fun cars. They were five cars representing price points. You could do that entire piece with five different cars. The C8 didn't do great there because that was a piece focused on driving involvement and fun. And many people in the comments have pointed out that the C8 is probably the most versatile car there. And I think that can be argued. Honestly, the Carrera T even isn't even the 911 you'd have for the most versatile. You'd have other 911s.
Yeah, true.
The C8 is approachable. It is financially somewhat attainable. And it is shocking. Watch our 2,000 mile piece with the C8 and the Lotus Elise. This is a car that anytime either one of us drove the C8, we were just like, ah, oh, this is so great. It's a great place to be. Honestly, if you have a C8, and we met some people like this in Mount Rushmore, if you have a C8 and you're not taking it on road trips, you have missed one of the best things about that car. I feel like everybody that buys a C8 should put thousands of miles a year on it just going new places. You can daily it, absolutely. You can take it to a track. It may be the most versatile near supercar made. Mm-hmm. And I would take it and never think twice about it compared to a lot of other supercars. But that is just designed to be the perfect cross-country road trip. If you are in Nebraska, which we've done, doing 100 for the next 2 hours.
Yeah,
that's Nebraska. Or you wind up on Million Dollar Highway in Colorado in a C8, you're very happy in both equations. That's hard. That's really hard.
You know, every time journalists ask us, other people, friends, they always say, so you've got a C8. What do you think of that car? Mm-hmm. And it always seems like a loaded question, but we can have full confidence in going in and just saying, it's fantastic. It's great to drive. Mm-hmm. No, it's not the most hardcore dialed sports car you'll ever get in. But on the other hand, you can be very comfortable on the road trips that we've done and prove that. It's such a versatile car. You're right. Oliver C. says where he is, a slightly used Integra manual is the same price as the equivalent Civic Si. For the same money, is the Integra the obvious choice? You know what we found and been told, and that is if Civic Si's aren't available because they are the kind of the hot choice, the Integra might be available for the same price or just might be available to buy, and that does make it compelling. It is good, although I do like the seats in the Civic Si better. I think I do prefer the Honda styling, but the Integra is really solid.
We got a question here. Adam's asking about the new Prius. Would it get as much attention if it weren't called a Prius, meaning a different car to contrast from prior marketing? Here's the thing. I think if it were a completely different car that did the same thing with a different badge, mm-hmm. I think it actually might sell a little better, because it wouldn't carry the baggage. The problem the Prius is having now, and even your question acknowledges it, is we're trying to get over the baggage that car has. But it's just a good-looking car that works. It's not the nicest interior. It's not the most comfortable seats, but it gets great gas mileage, and it looks good, and it's not that expensive. That car is a victory. I think the Prius badge makes, in some cases, it get more press than it would otherwise. But I think sales-wise, there are people that will never consider or buy that car because it says Prius on it, and that's too bad.
Jorge Porto says, here's to the Brotherhood of the Jorges. All his friends automatically assume it's him. Force multiplier, all of our friends who are named Jorge, thank you guys for being with us. Jorge Porto, we met him in L.A.
Yep.
Back in November just prior to the L.A. Auto Show. It was really cool to meet him and hopefully see him at various events coming up as well. Got a question from Shadow Sniper 9513. It says, hey guys, I work at a BMW dealership as a product specialist. What do we think about the new X2? I think it's certainly evolutionary, but that is a crutch. That is a way out of saying the BMW styling theme. I think they're taking a hard look at, but they're trying to certainly apply it to every shape and size of every vehicle they make. And it's not always successful. There are some surfaces of this that I do feel like it's successful, and that is because SUVs that are boxy and square just kind of seem more expensive and luxurious. That has now been the theme of the new Kias and Hyundais that we're seeing, more squared off kinds of shapes. I do appreciate what's going on, and that has always been sort of the Range Rover look, and that has said more expensive. It's just a box. I mean, it's a Rolls-Royce Cullinan. The Cullinan looks a little too soft, so maybe the Cullinan will crispen things up a little bit now, you know, since they're owned by BMW anyway, so maybe we'll get a new look out of them. But I am curious to discover that the X2 is the only SUV of BMW's SUVs globally that is not built at the Southern South Carolina factory. It is actually built in Germany, but every other BMW SUV that you see on the planet comes from South Carolina, which is amazing. So yeah, it's built in, I believe it's Munich at one of the Munich factories right there. But I mean, it's fine. I think it's certainly evolutionary, and they're really leaning into that styling element. And if they continue to do so, they will really make it theirs. But I don't feel like it instantly screams BMW. It says luxurious, but I don't know that it just says, that's a BMW.
the Tiff. Anyway, I'm curious to drive it for sure. Dan is saying he test drove a Fiesta ST finally over the weekend. Such a fun little car. He has a daily family car, which is a new Ford Ranger. He's debating whether to buy the Fiesta ST for a fun car or keep saving for the Elise or Cayman. My guess is that the Fiesta ST is probably costing you a quarter what an Elise or Cayman is.
Mm.
So my question for you is, of course it's us, so we're saying buy all the cars, but could you have a Fiesta ST and keep saving for the Elise and Cayman? It's not like the Fiesta is even half what a Elise or Cayman are. So I'm thinking, I mean, why not get a Fiesta ST now? It's probably 10 grand on the high side. You know what I mean? And Caymans are 30 to 40, depending upon which one you want. And Elises are every bit of 40 right now. That's a very different car. The mid-engine cars are worth saving for, worth stretching for. But I wonder, if you bought a Fiesta ST now and kept it for 5 years, what's it going to lose? A couple grand? I mean, you're probably going to get most of what you buy it for back out of it, because those cars have kind of bottomed out. So I think that is a safe place to buy, drive, keep your money in, and then jump later.
Minty's got a question that I'm mulling over. Minty, thanks for the question. We have talked about the less than fun time that we had at the dealership when we bought the GR86. The question is there anything that we feel a dealership can do to make the experience better for the consumer? As I was walking through that dealership, I saw a plethora of lounges. There were various lounges scattered throughout the dealership because it's, of course, huge, but different themes, different lounges with different chairs. They had an espresso bar. There were baristas inside the dealership. So what does that tell you? You're a captive audience there, and they know you're going to be stuck there. It's about valuing us, the customer, our time. Not that I don't want you to have a comfortable place to sit or be able to grab a snack or a coffee, but it just seems like a Vegas lounge. I mean, what's next? There's going to be a stage show and, you know, we're going to just never leave. No clocks on the walls.
Coming
and,
up on the main stage.
Yeah.
All the moving sidewalks go toward the coffee bar.
Seriously. Yeah. So it's about valuing the customer's time and making it so efficient to get the customer back out the door, whether they're buying a car, whether they're in the service. I know sometimes waiting is inevitable, but still, making things to value time. So it's, you know, we're putting it back in your hands and think they really respected my time. I want to go back for whatever the needs
That's a great point, because I want to clarify that we worked with Mark Miller Toyota here in Salt Lake. And honestly, they were one of the best dealers to work with I've ever worked
they
with.
They were superb.
So yes. I don't want to give the impression we had a bad dealer experience.
No. I was just noticing
that. The problem was inside of kind of being fast tracked and treated well, we were still there half the day. And that comes back to your point. You would think in the modern world, aren't there things that we can do digitally, online, or preload, or whatever, to just speed the process? Because I've been at
like
dealers.
When you rent a car?
Yes.
Just show me the license. Boop, here's the keys. Thanks for renting.
But I'm at dealers with others and with actually my own family at one point where the kids have timed out. You don't want to be anywhere when the kids time out. I don't care where
That's
it
true.
Is. So
That's
just
true.
How fast can we move?
I mean, we don't need a ball pit in the dealership. We don't need a...
Maybe for the adults, actually. You're so frazzled. You just I'm going to get in the ball in. Pit. Just give me a minute.
Why can't it be like a bar?
Resurface out of the ball pit.
We're going to sit at a dealership.
Grady's saying Z4 manual or super manual if you're indifferent to the top-down experience. If you don't need top-down, I say Supra. I think so. I think it's it's the more interesting looking car on its own. You need top-down, I do think that I thank God that the Z4 has gotten the manual now, because I couldn't believe they hadn't done it already. So I think it's good that it's going to have it.
Sonny asks about the Subaru rumor. They're going to reveal a new Outback generation at the New York Auto Show next month. Do we think they might not be a new generation legacy, since it's not in Japan and doesn't sell well here? Well, I feel like it's just going to be another refresh at this point. I don't know. I have not dug into the Subaru press release quite yet, but it's going to take a lot for Subaru to make a big splash and wow everybody with the new something that isn't just, well, it's all-wheel drive. It can go off-road, it can carry your stuff, and it's well-priced and turbocharged, and it's got a good screen. So beyond that, what's really compelling? We're buying styling. That's what we're buying, right?
G Marks is saying he loves the channel. Thank you so much. He's thinking about buying a manual BRZ as a second fun car now that they've updated it with the 2.4-liter motor, the current engine. Should he only get that and not one of the outdated models with the 2-liter? G-Marks, you're going to have to ask yourself what you're expecting from power. If you are a person who you've never really had a powerful car, the first generation, you can get them affordably. They drive wonderfully. I think you would thoroughly enjoy it. I would definitely advise the tune. It's a very simple tune that kind of kills the torque dip, which is the real thing that makes you feel like that car is underpowered. I did the tune. Chance did the tune. We both had our first generations. It helps a lot. If you're not a person who is coming from a muscle car, something with 400 plus horsepower, you're going to like the first gen just fine. If you're a person where power equals fun to you, the first generation is probably only going to disappoint you, and then you're going to start tuning it. And almost across the board, the people that tuned the first gen for more power eventually broke the motor. And at that point, get the second gen.
Did we talk about the Z4 manual yet?
Yes.
We did, from Brad. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm
excited about it.
I mean, Grady's talking about that or the Supra. I don't know if Brad's question adds
I suppose. I was seeing any excitement for that Z4 manual.
Justin is applauding me and also shaking his head at me because he is a fellow Elise owner and he saw me post the thing of taking it through the touchless car wash. By the way.
That was brave of you, by the way.
Stupid, brave. There's an equivalency there. Anyway, I've owned the car for 7 years and I've taken it through a touchless car wash twice total because the first time was so traumatic and was just done as a test right after I got the car and I had the soft top on. This time I had the hard top on and we'd taken it actually through a lot of snow. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to get it all blasted because of the snow and salt that had been on it, a little more so than I could do with my own pressure washer. So that's why I took the risk. I also thought, let's see how bad the hard top leaks. Guess what? Just as bad. It's not something I do regularly. I haven't seen any gremlins since then. I was cautious, and it's a kind of a one-time thing for the laugh. And of course, then I post on Instagram and get to look like an idiot, which is fun. That happened.
More HOD questions. Ryan Stamp is asking about the HOD deal. Who had more anxiety between the two of us during the purchasing process? Or did we take turns? We took turns.
I feel like
when you were on edge,
mm-hmm.
then I had to come to the rescue. And when I was just fed up with things, it was quite a learning experience. That was 10 months of negotiations and investigations. And it's something that neither you or I have done in our past.
You mean we just don't go around buying companies?
What are you saying? No, it was actually the due diligence period was really revealing and it changed perceptions about what we were getting and what we were buying. And of course, We always had ideas up front, but then as you find out things and what's possible, and then you know to grow the brand and certainly grow the availability of track days, it just informed us a lot. So there was constant pivoting and there was certainly a lot of stress, but I'm so thrilled that we're doing this, and thank you guys for your support of HOD. We definitely want to grow. We definitely want to get more people on track. And what a great venue to do it. It's a business that runs, and we've got people and great franchisees already in place for that.
So yeah, it's really good. In fact, Jorge's asking us as a follow-up. He said he's got two young girls interested in having advanced driver education for them as they approach driving age beyond what he can do. He's seen that in Europe. There's not many opportunities here. There's a few. I think, if I'm not wrong, I think Tire Rack does one on the East Coast at their thing. I think they partner with somebody
in track.
I think so. I think they do.
South Bend, Indiana.
I know that our local track UMC here used to do one. In fact, I need to look into it again because my son's about a year from needing that. But he's asking, is this a Hooked on Driving opportunity? And my short answer is yes. I think it would be great to have a standardized Hooked on Driving sponsored, you're a young driver, get you driving at the limits thing. Now, setting that up is a whole different animal, but it's definitely one of those things we've talked about for sure.
Our friend Derek Miller. Derek, hello. He had a salesman text him today with a fully customizable allocation for a car that he wasn't shopping for.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah, I got it.
Why is it so hard to say no when he wasn't even shopping for it? Because salespeople know this, and they go back through their Rolodex and think, I haven't talked to this person in a long time. Let me just give them a call. And if you're a great customer, you'll be kind of towards the top and say, wonder if they're interested.
There's two things going on here, Derek. First off, the reason it's hard to say no is because you get to hear that thing that, especially if you've ever bought a used car, you get to go like, wait, exactly like I want it.
You're thinking of me?
Like that one? Exactly. Yeah. I've never thought about a Camry, but if I could make my Camry, then maybe, and I'm not taking a slight at the Camry, it's just a car I'd never buy. That's what part of it. The other thing is, if you get up into the higher levels of cars, Porsche is known for this, Ferrari is known for this, the salespeople go back through their Rolodex and they find people they know have the liquidity or have shown with regular purchases, either way, that they will buy a car. The salesman is literally thinking about selling it the second time, and they will call the person the first time.
It's crazy.
And guide them on how to spec it.
Ferrari does this to option your car. Well, Porsche does it too. From new.
So that then when that person sells it in 6 months or a year, or sometimes they encourage them to do that as a money-making way, then they can get a car back they can sell easier.
They're thinking of customer number two. They're not you.
They're thinking of their commission on the backside.
They're thinking of the second customer. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The person that gave us the GT2 RS when we drove it against the Porsche 959 for that comparison film, he told us that he was called by Porsche of Salt Lake City, said, "Hey, this other owner dropped out. I know you've made noises about this car. What do you think?" And suddenly he found himself on the hook for a $350,000 car. But then he did sell it, and I think he even made money, and they're even more expensive now. So, you know, everybody made money in the deal, but it's because it's a GT2 RS.
Elliot Manning is following up on the Lotus extravaganza in the car wash. Yes, I don't know why people thought that was a brush wash. It was just a
touchless. The brushes would have been like...
Oh, yes, seriously. I would have been like fighting them all.
Slapping you in the face.
Yeah, no, so it was touchless. But he said he's assuming the high pressure water was the problem. You're exactly right, Elliot. In fact, the way I normally wash that car, watch our 2,000 mile road trip piece because I walk you through it. Even using my own pressure washer, I do not aim it right at the seam of the roof and the top of the window because I know the water's going to go through. I mean, you can spray around it, but don't fire at it. Of course, that thing's indiscriminate, so it ends up with water on the inside.
Doug Joseph, thank you for jumping on. Thank you for your questions. Much appreciated. I'm jumping back to Instagram from a friend, Akam in Germany, who was asking, why is the same engine in the Fiat 500 Abarth a hoot, the little dragon, Todd, you called it that, and celebrated for its sound? While in the not much heavier 124, he had that impression that in our recent Italian review, it did not receive a lot of love. Mm. This does nothing better than a Miata. Akam personally prefers mid-range turbo punch in daily driving, but that 124 is used 5,000 euro more than the ND Miata, which is not justified. It's a slightly different engine, Akam, but you're right. Ultimately, it comes down to how does it make power and how does it make me feel when I'm driving the car? I feel like it's the exhaust. I really do. Sound is such a sales thing and will always continue to be. But sound that's available now and the way the car was originally conceived, because you could also argue, well, you can add an exhaust to any car and make it sound differently. Yes, but now you're suddenly doing R&D work to develop your own sound.
Trying to get the good sound.
You're spending money, and what if it's not quite right? Well, they tuned it specifically just like that to give it a certain personality, and that sells or doesn't sell. It doesn't appeal to some customers. But I think sound is the key. Same engine, but they can tune it slightly differently, get a few more horsepower, and it sounds different. It's a different car, right?
It does seem like it. And, you know, when we first drove that car, you actually liked the 124 for the same thing he's talking about, that mid-range power. But as I said in our 124 MC20 piece, the best part of that car are the Miata bones. I think it's definitely the case.
The Damon KB on Instagram says, is Infiniti the best used car brand? I have never heard that. Now, there is just so much that's better at the same price point. But unless you get luxury for the same price as Nissan or even cheaper than the comparable Honda and Toyota products, not to mention Lexus, Acura, and the Germans, I mean, ultimately, you have to decide what is your priority. And it is a descending order. Is it value first and you got something that feels luxurious? Then is it reliability? Then is it the company behind that nameplate? And then in descending order, all the fun things that we want out of a car. I think that's where certainly Infiniti could shine. I do like Acura and certainly Lexus is up there, but personally, I'm willing to move more towards the Euro cars that have the fun driving kind of built in. I mean, I gravitate towards that direction because I'm willing to put up with some of the, all right, it needs this, the maintenance, the fixes, the...
You're a Maserati owner. I understand.
I've been a Maserati owner, okay? So
resets everything. Philip is saying, in a money no object situation, would we rather take our car to a dealership or an independent mechanic for any and all maintenance? Now, Philip, I'm kind of ducking this question by saying this. Where is the place where I feel like I'm going to get the most personal service from the guy that's actually going to do the work? If I were going to a dealer and that dealer had a front-facing person who was like the tech for that car, and I could meet that person, and I felt confident with them that, oh yeah, I know these cars and that kind of thing, I have no problem going to the dealer, and I'll pay dealer prices for that guy. If I'm going to an independent mechanic, he specializes in that car, and I get that same feeling from him. I get to meet him, shake his hand, and he gets to say, hey, I'm going to work on this car, and I know these things. I want to be able to talk to the tech, and I feel like that's harder at a dealer than an independent mechanic. That's the thing that gives me confidence.
Great questions in here.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff.
Beaker's Garage recently had a Taycan base as a loaner from the dealer. He thought it was good for an EV, but missed his flat six after a day. What are our thoughts on the Taycan compared to other EVs? We've not specifically driven a Taycan. We have driven the Audi e-tron GT, which is pretty much going to be the same driving experience. There will be slight differences in how power is delivered and that kind of thing, but for the most part, you know, it's very solid, but we're still at the beginning of modern EVs and what they will do and what the capability will and can be. And I'm talking about weight, and they still just feel so neutral to me. Just too neutral, I suppose.
Well, yeah, they've got a sterileness about them in general that I look forward to somebody actually creating something that doesn't feel that way, but it'll be fascinating to see what happens. T. Whalen sings, please tell us how to reduce the crippling road noise in the GR86 switching from the stock PS4 tires to Pirellis did absolutely nothing. I hate to say this, but that is a loud car and always will be. I mean, unless you want to take the time to put more sound deadening in it, the cost of the car and the weight savings are the reason it's loud. I submit to you the Fiesta ST, louder. I submit to you the Miata, louder. I submit to you the Lotus Elise, lots louder, because I'm talking about cars that are now cheaper or lighter than the GR86. Also, you're down there low between the wheel wells. That brings noise into the cabin. That is a loud car. I remember when we drove it as a support vehicle. In fact, Derek helped us when we did our East Coast trip. Anytime I rode in that, it had more road noise than my 300ZX that I was taking on the same trip, which I thought was fascinating. And the 300ZX was actually a little bit softer ride too, but the 300ZX was a more expensive car designed to be more of a GT car than the GR86, which is designed to be more involving. Granted, with the Elise as my reference point, I'm the wrong guy to ask.
Why shouldn't Boondock St. Ryan sell his Fiesta ST and start importing and selling Japanese K cars into Canada to make it a better place? You can't think of any good reasons. We can't tell you, but we know somebody who can, and that is our friend Adam at Soto Moto in Seattle. Look up sotomoto.com, and he can tell you, because he actually imports a lot of cars into the U.S. from Canada, but he sells a lot of K cars that he brings over from Japan, and you can ask him about the ins and outs and pitfalls, or maybe no pitfalls, of sourcing and buying. We do know that AutoZam AZ1 windshield is about $3,000 to replace. So just know that going in, the parts and the scarcity of such for all these rare, cool cars might be harder, and you're going to have to let your customers know that. Or maybe not.
Adrian H. is saying, like the 86 or the Supra or even the Fiata from our recent video, what brands would we most like to see unite to make a new fun car? I think we said this before, but I have to circle back to it. Toyota has proven that they are doing collaborations. So where is Toyota and Porsche making a new MR2, a $40,000-ish MR2 to be sold as a Toyota underneath the Porsche offerings of the Boxster. It's going to need to be 200 horsepower. So it's probably, what, the detuned flat motor from Porsche with some Toyota stuff in it. I'm just thinking that would be a cool car.
Got a question on Instagram from 614MX5 asking, when we talk about driver engagement for manual transmission cars, are we talking about the physical act of pressing in the clutch and shifting and then releasing the clutch? Or are we talking about listening and feeling for when to upshift and when to downshift for maximum fun? And if it's the latter, don't shiftable automatics or dual clutch transmissions provide that level of involvement? I do get some of that out of my dual clutch. I do when I drive it in manual mode. But I think it's the feeling of feeling where the cog is going to, well, first of all, the synchro, but then the cog going into gear. And it's about control. I think that all of us would probably rather fly the airplane than be a passenger if we could.
There's certainly a segment of us that very much feel that way.
Control freaks. Yeah,
I just would like to fly the plane. I think it's fun. I'm not a control freak. I just think I'd like to do it.
But same thing with cars. We like to have that much more dominance over this machine. We want to be in control over the machine, and I think that's much of it. But understanding and feeling all the quirks about that car, because manual transmissions make each individual car different, that series, because the clutch wear is different, the clutch or the gearbox wear is different. Everything about that car wears differently. It's not, you know, it's cookie cutter new. It's all the same when they're new. But when different cars get driven differently, this one's kind of beat on, it's rattly and not great. This is the same exact car, same mileage, and how come it feels so good? Now that manual transmission makes that car have its own distinct personality. I think that's what we love discovering.
That is good. The other thing I'm going to add to that is think about this for a minute. Think about driving a really good PDK, dual clutch, whatever. You can sit there and drive that car very hard and never move your limbs.
True.
You can do this.
Yeah.
But your lower body won't move at all because all that's moving is, you know, seriously,
finger twitch.
You don't have to move your limbs.
Yeah.
And with a manual transmission, your right hand's always moving for the stick, your left foot, and both your legs are moving. There is, I know it's a cliche, but there is a dance going on when you drive a manual that is not duplicated by any dual clutch.
Totally.
Because you can sit there much more still. Now, if you're on a racetrack, that's better because you are still in the car and focused on what you're doing. And so these other things that remove your balance in the car can be disruptive. But if I'm driving for fun, I want that dance. It's enjoyable.
It's not quite rider active, but almost.
Because
you're almost sliding around in your seat when your limbs, I mean, your weight's changing. You're right. When you're just driving an automatic or a dual clutch, you're locked down. Your body's not moving. But when we're doing this with our limbs, you're right. It suddenly becomes rider active.
We're excited to announce a new partnership with Battery Tender. If you park your car for any length of time, you need it to start. The last thing you want is to hear that labored whine of a dead battery. That's why you need a Battery Tender battery charger to properly maintain your battery in your vehicle, give it a long life, and quick starts every time. We're already customers. We use Battery Tender battery chargers on all our cars year-round, and especially through the snowy winter months here in Park City.
Since 1965, Deltran Battery Tender has been the leader in battery chargers. Their BTP microprocessor technology and quick connect convenience automatically maintains the batteries in all of your vehicles. Lead acid, AGM, or lithium. Keep your batteries in top condition. Visit BatteryTender.com to find the right product for you, including battery chargers, jump starters, inverters, and more. Plus, as our listeners, you can use the code EVERYDAY to get 10% off your order at BatteryTender.com.
Let's see. Kay and Meg's dad says, searching for next manual fun car. Past experiences include an E46 sedan, cool car, 987.2 base Cayman, and a first-gen BRZ. He says he knows that Miata is always the answer. He's looking at an NC, which is the third-gen, along with a second-gen GR86, maybe even a WRX. But his question is, he's not even looking at front-wheel drive candidates. So is he overlooking a whole fun segment of the market by not looking at front-wheel drive candidates? Mm. Okay, first, Kay and Meg's dad, you need to drive a couple of the front-wheel drive standouts. Go drive a Fiesta ST. You can find them for so cheap. Go drive one. Go drive a Mini Cooper, preferably the John Cooper works, but drive a Mini Cooper S with a manual. Drive a Civic Type R if you can, because I want you to understand how really great they are. Now, let me turn it the other way. I had a Mini Cooper for a year and loved driving it. But I realized while owning it that I just don't like front wheel drive enough. Mm-hmm. There was nothing wrong with it. Spot was a great car. He was fantastic in the winter. And you know, I learned to use understeer in the snow to my benefit, which was also riotously funny. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The supercharger whine on that car was amazing. You talk about sound. That was great. But I just realized, you know, I just prefer the way a rear wheel drive car gets unsettled and the way the weight moves around because of rear wheel drive. So that's why I prefer it. But you need to drive those front wheel drive standouts to get a sense of it. I don't think you're in the wrong for wanting rear wheel drive primarily. I think based on the stuff you've owned, I think you're going to find the WRX to be a little bit muted for the fun you're hoping to have. I like the other stuff on your list.
Great questions here. Joel T on Facebook asks us both when it comes to our own car progression, what is next? Knows that we love the Elise for Todd and Cayman GTS for me. What's next?
can we go up the? I mean, here's the debate. Look, there are things up the ladder of cost that would be great to have, but you know, money's a real thing. You know,
money's a thing, and I have said before that your lineage of cars throughout your life doesn't have to be the next dollar amount to your higher.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always have to be this ascending till finally we own Artura Spiders and we're good with 700, 690 brake horsepower, whatever. I'm not saying that. It makes it easier having access to the cars that we drive. I will say that because when we miss a car, suddenly it comes back around where we get to drive an 86 again, or we get to revisit.
You're right, yeah.
Simply by virtue of thinking another comparison to put it in, or a new version of it, or something like that. But when it comes to personal cars, you heard me making noise about selling that Cayman GTS, and I have backed off that because it's
just... I know
just,
you have, yeah.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
There's versions of the Cayman that are empirically better, but it's going to take more money to do it, and that's my personal problem. I can't quite get there yet. But the Corvette has done a lot to help alleviate that itch, mm-hmm. but I still really love my Cayman GTS. I still look at it as a long-termer, but I would like to have a GT4 RS. But actually, I've really been... jonesing for
that's right, it's on your shirt.
The shirt, keep yeah. wearing this shirt, trying to like mm-hmm.
you're just telling the universe this the is message. The car you'd like. I got it, that's very good. Exactly, I mean, but look, I'd love to step up having a mirror. That would be amazing. I'd love to have an Amira. I want a
GT3 manual. That's what I want. GT3
sure,
manual.
Okay,
just new GT3.
I'll tell you this right now,
992.
For me, I think an Amira is the upper level car I'd ever own. I don't know that I'd own a 200. I mean, let's say I could afford a $200,000 or $300,000, $400,000, $1 million car. I'm not sure I'd buy one, because then I lose manual, and you do get in a car. You have to, just because of what it is, you have to think about it more when you drive it. And one of the things I loved about that Price of Fun piece, besides all of the fun cars, even compared to the Lotus, the thing I liked about the GR86 was it was just like, I'm just going to get in this and drive it. I'm going to drive it as hard as I possibly want. I'm not going to worry about it, because it was a $30,000 Toyota product. I would have a GR86 again tomorrow instantly. I'd have a Miata for the same reason. I don't fit. I'd have to, you know, sit there like this the whole time. But I mean, there is something really satisfying about that. And I you know, I may keep that Elise, if I can, I'll keep that Elise indefinitely, because nothing comes back and really replaces that. But you and I are spoiled, because we do get into so much stuff. Yeah. And then the show, this is such a weird thing that we do. The show encourages us to buy cars, the GR86, the C8, the crazy sedans, the crazy sports cars. It encourages us to do that, because if we hit the target right, we can actually have that make us money for a time period. And so it makes sense to pay to have those cars. But that's a weird way to live. We'll see where this goes.
Barbara Peterson says, there's nothing better than the perfect shift based on sound and feel.
Agreed.
You're right.
Agreed.
There's a perfect lap out there, Barbara. There's a perfect shift, too. Can you see it? Can you envision the perfect shift? And you just
it's so great.
Smile.
It's so great. So yep. great. Track Daily Crush from Matt. Piano Black, CVTs
yes,
or
crush.
EVs? Well, that's quite a threesome. Piano Black, CVTs, or EVs. Track Daily Crush. You know what? I'm going to daily the EV. I'm not even going to question that. I'll daily the EV. That's fine.
CVTs are improving slowly. There's some CVTs that are sort of like,
okay, can we tune a CVT for track use? And then I'll track the CVT. So it's theoretically, if it's tuned right, it's constant power. Constant power, and then we get to crush Piano Black.
We need to crush Piano Black, but if we can put a lot of power, there's needs to be some OEM that figures out how to put a lot of power through a CVT, then I might consider driving. We'll see. Church Petrol says, the first F1 race of the year is this weekend. You're right, Bahrain is coming up March 2nd, 2024. Any predictions for the upcoming season? I think Red Bull's going to be dominant again.
Max is going to win? That's not even a prediction. It's just like, moving on.
Get used to Max doing more winning. But I do predict some surprise from a back marker, a mid-pack to a back marker, kind of surprising with some success, level of success. It might not be sustained for the whole season, but maybe for half the year, a third of the year, something like, wow, we never saw this coming. Combination of car and the driver is really coming up. I'm hoping for a mid-pack to back marker doing well.
Marco sending in a super chat. Thank you for that, man. He says he drives a Mark 7.5 Golf R.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it worth upgrading to the new Mark 8? No, it is not. I'm sorry. It's just, I like the Mark 8 Golf R. I do. The thing is, you step into, Volkswagen is starting to do things to not make the interior as nice and save themselves some money. And then they went with this now constantly changing touchscreen interface on the Golf R. Like on the GTI, you can get it without some of it. The Golf R, the only way it comes is with that very annoying, irritating interface that actually Volkswagen is kind of backing off on. I think that the 8.5 or the 9 is going to be worth the upgrade based on what they're learning with the 8.
Okay.
So 7.5 was a real high watermark for the interior interaction on those cars. I like the 8 because of what they've done with the cool diffs and that kind of stuff. That is cool, but you're talking about 10 grand more, and I think what you're going to realize daily is the interface you like less, and since you're going to use that so much, that car's designed to be a daily. I don't think it's worth the jump.
Some question I wanted to address in here. Oh, premiumness. Dawson Johannes said, at what price point do we stop feeling the premiumness of the dollars you're spending? Is there one? Yes, it's called a Tesla. As soon as you get in, you think, this doesn't feel premium for the dollars I spent. But that's because of the minimalist interior. But it's not because of the style. It's because of the materials that are used in construction. We've noticed that. They're getting better. They continue to improve. Absolutely. Every car manufacturer is. But I do think that Tesla set the example and modeled for other car manufacturers that we can just do a few straight lines and really do things completely differently. But they forgot about all the build quality in all the switches and stuff that's in there, all the little tactile things. I think that was forgotten. And so not having a lot of things to touch makes it feel stark and cheap, and there's nothing to interact with except the wheel, and even that's going away. So there's other examples. I feel like Genesis is a great example of retaining the premium quality feel. That GV60 EV that we drove felt very premium. It was fantastic, and that was because there's a lot of little surprise and delight things, a lot of things that you could call unnecessary. But that makes it part of the experience, and you feel like, oh, I'm getting my money's worth. The shift knob entertains me. It's the Eye of Sauron, and it looked at me.
A little frightened now, worried about that breaking later. Like, breaks halfway. It's like looking, giving you a side eye. It's all bad.
But all the tactility, all the switches, everything in there continues that Genesis theme of beautiful. We like the fine tactility of things, and that's why I like watches so much, because it's this delicate thing that's still robust, and it was put together by humans, and it's such fine craftsmanship in such a small size on your wrist that you can take with you. So that's my thing.
My son is sending me difficult questions.
Oh, is he?
Track Daily Crush from my son, Lotus Elise, Jag E-Type, Nissan 300ZX, Track Daily Crush.
You're on your own.
Oh, this is gonna hurt. This is gonna hurt, son. I'm telling you right now. Look, the track car obviously is the Lotus Elise. It is. I love the E-Type desperately. I would love to have one. It's not a daily. The 300ZX is a daily, which means, I can't believe I'm saying this, the Elise gets tracked, the 300ZX gets dailied, and the E-Type gets crushed. That's a special occasion car.
Wow.
It's not a daily and it's not a track car.
But it's so drive it every it's now. The world's it's, most beautiful
it's
car.
Gorgeous. It's very fun to drive. It is one of those cars like the RX-7. When I drove it, I was glad to finish driving it and it didn't break. I loved driving it. I was thrilled to get out of it and nothing was broken. And that's not what you want for a daily.
Chris Osterman, so good to see you too. I ran into him at the Denver airport. I looked over as I was on the moving sidewalks. If you've ever been through DIA, I was on the moving sidewalks and I saw Chris and just yelled his name.
That's funny.
Chris is going with us on the pilgrimage trip in June, so we're very much looking forward to that. That was really cool.
Speaking of that, Fellowship of the Ring, folks, I want to mention a couple of things. Our pilgrimage trip is happening over Father's Day, and it sold out within like 24 hours, which was amazing. Thank
amazing.
You guys.
Yes.
But because of Hooked on Driving, we are going more than once this year. There is a trip that actually was kind of sold right around the time we bought the company of Hooked on Driving that is happening last couple of days of April, first couple of days of May. It's 2 days on each track. And you know somebody. So even though technically registration on that trip has closed, it's going to be an amazing trip with a ton of good track time. If you'd like to go to the Ring and Spa then, late April, early May, write us an email, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. Let us know you'd like to go. We can get you on the inside track. There's a couple of spaces left. We'd love to fill that trip too. So if you're still interested.
It's kind of closed, but it's still
officially
it's right
closed,
on the,
but
on the
you
cusp.
Know people. So let us know. That'd be people. Very good. Yeah.
You do know people. Let's see. Good questions.
John, okay. Here's a quick question. Difficult question, John. He doesn't understand what people mean when they say good steering feel. And he wants to learn.
Okay, awesome.
What is an accessible car, easy to find on Turo or Popular, that exemplifies good steering feel? You need to find something. Okay, first off, there's a misunderstanding that a hydraulic steering rack always means good steering feel. That's not always the case. The 300ZX, I love driving it. The steering feel's okay, but it's not amazing. You need to find early 2000s hydraulic steering from various companies. BMW is a great one. If you can find an E46 BMW, that's good steering feel. If you can find a early 2000s 911 or even a Cayman.
Yeah, 987.
The Dot 1.
Dot 1.
The early Caymans and the 987 Boxsters.
The Cayman R is super.
Yeah. Now the Caymans, I find vary based on how hard you're driving them, the tires that are fitted. But every early 2000s BMW I've driven, the E46s and even the 5 Series actually had really good steering feel. That early 2000s 911 or Cayman Boxster, that works as well. The 997s are wonderful. That's late 2000s. Also, Miatas are good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Early Miatas. Now you got to go before they go away from hydraulic steering. A little bit tire dependent there as well, and then. I'm wondering.
I mean, the sharper and finer you go, tires really absolutely.
They start to really matter.
They get magnified.
For sure. But you need to be able to feel when you go over stuff in the road. I want you to feel that you went over stuff in the road. I want you to feel this is actually what the description is. Steering feel is as I'm turning it, I am aware that there's a mechanical linkage. And I know that sounds weird, but I'm sorry, this is a cliche as well, but this is where the rifle bolt concept comes in for shifters, okay?
Drives like it's on rails.
Oh, stop. But the whole reality of a rifle bolt or think of anything mechanical or metal that slid beside itself that you've worked with, you can feel that in good steering feel. Of course, the Lotus Elise is way up there, but finding one of those on Turo is next to impossible, but that's a possibility as well.
Josiah Van Tassel, thank you for the question. He loves the show and says, is the upgrade to a 986S worth the price over the base version? More specifically, on an 03 or 4S versus a cheaper and older version, he's owned a 350Z, now daily CBR 500R, and a roommate has the S2000. You know, you could always turbo the motor or do some sort of chiptune or upgrade, but there's more to the S than just that.
True. Typically, it's got a different transmission with another gear and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do feel like the S has always been differentiated in Porsche's mind as really truly the sport version. And there's a bigger jump between base and S than there is S to GTS. It's slightly different. And then, you know what I mean? I feel like that base to S needs to remain significant because that has been bread and butter kind of thinking for Porsche forever. Since the late 60s, actually early 70s, there's always been the S, which is sort of like, Oh, you've got the S, the 911S. Aha, that's what you want. So I do feel like it's worth your money. I do feel like it's worth investigating. If you can get a good deal, if you're comfortable and you can pull it off, I do say it's worth it. And I mean, it's coming from a Porsche guy. There's another question about 911s from Joel T on Facebook, who says, Eddie Murphy, my apologies. Eddie Murphy says, when did the 911, what generation did it become the benchmark for journalists? The year was 1968, the year after the 911 came out. It became instantly
64, but
64, sorry.
64, so, but yes.
Anyway,
came out
64.
63 by 64. It was like, No,
next year.
I think when it really started to embed itself completely was probably the mid 80s, when I think other cars started to splinter. And I feel like the 911 really was solidifying itself in the US with the turbo and the big whale tail.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that era, it got so, because here's the other thing that happened. In the 80s with the turbo, they became the Widowmaker. And it was like the dividing line for can you drive or not.
Oh, yeah.
So if you loved the 911, it was because you knew how to drive.
Many journalists, not.
Yeah, exactly. Still to this day, not. But I think that started to split it and started to make people think that it was even better than it really is. Boondock Saint Ryan. Why are pop-up headlights on sports cars dangerous to pedestrians, but truck hoods at high eye level are not? My friend Ryan, you're now my buddy. We're here, man. We're here. I have a real problem with pedestrian crash standards. I think they are ruining cars. I'm going to say it again. Look, I don't want anybody to get hit by a car, but stay out of the street.
It's easy.
Let's create pedestrian walkways. Let's create pedestrian only streets so you can walk up and down. I know that in Park City, I'm going to get eggs thrown at me, but Park City, every now and then, Main Street is pedestrians only. And every time it is, I'm like, this is all the street should be.
Doesn't
Main
that,
Street,
uh, in,
Park City should just be pedestrians only all the time. There's no reason to have cars on that road. So let's make more pedestrian-only streets.
Yeah.
Let's make better crosswalks. Let's make better signaling. And let's make cars that can have slanted hood and pop-up headlights, because I'm sorry, you and I were driving some GM truck recently, and I stopped at the hood, and the hood was here. I am a big person.
It's enormous.
If you are
so
in a pickup
big.
Line, you will not see kids. The pop-up headlights is the least of our worries. But the problem with pedestrian crash standards is they're just trying, this is the solve. We're trying to make air between where the hood is and where the hard engine is. And that's what's ruining front ends of cars.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing that's going to save us all. The truck that's mowing us down, that's fine. Because at least it's got air between the hood. If you happen to get up on the hood, you'll be okay.
What's that, the new Miata concept, or sorry, Mazda MX-9 concept that I just saw? Doesn't that have like slight pop-up headlights? I thought it was just they're bringing back just because it's cool. I mean, we don't need pop-up headlights, but they are really cool, and it's cool for some part of the car to articulate. The Pagani Huayra, you know, it articulates, and it's cool for something to happen. I think that sells cars. I think we're coming back around to this. Yeah, it's like clothing styles. It's we're coming back around to things.
I'm going to run back over here to other questions from earlier. Let's see. Ted Adam Green says, a buddy of his just bought a 2019 Nissan 370Z manual with rev match. And Ted's saying, can we explain this? He's never had a manual with rev match. He doesn't understand why his buddy considered that a must have. Now, the Nissan Z actually pioneered rev match really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
They had one of the first that was offered to the general public.
That particular
and it
one
works
is really good.
Very well.
Yeah.
The benefit of this, Ted, is it makes a manual transmission more easy to daily. Because the frustrating thing about a manual, if you're doing that commute kind of drone driving where you're not really thinking, is easily slotting the gear and doing the blip and that kind of stuff can be like I'm not in the groove of it. Now, I like learning the heel toe and getting good at that. And I screw it up a lot to this day. I screw up heel toe all the time. And so there is something satisfying. I'll tell you this, on track, I actually like a manual with rev match, because then I still get the manual, but it always is going to slot that gear really quickly. There's an extra layer of accessibility there. Now, the other thing about the Z car, and most of them, is you can turn it off, which is really nice. And you can pick your moment when having it just easily slot is helpful.
Starting to wrap up as we get to the top of the hour. Back to coffee. Jordan Schieffer says, is my new Gadget Academia the insert car of espresso machines? I'm thinking it's a do-it-all car, but it's got to be fast, because I was looking for great, fast espresso. And it does the steam wand and the milk jug, as I told you before. It's got to be something like the Mercedes GLE 63. It's fast. It can do the sports car thing. It's on. You can take it on track. You shouldn't, but you can. And it's really fast and it's versatile. Maybe it's a Cayenne GTS, because it can do everything. It can go off-road.
Oh my gosh.
It can go high speed on track. We can go over dunes. You could do some high performance kind of driving with a Cayenne, a GTS. Maybe it's the GT, the Cayenne GT with the back window.
Oh my
you know
gosh.
What I'm talking about? Wow.
Steve, yes, we have purchased Hooked on Driving. If you haven't heard our earlier podcast, it is the company that does high-performance driving events around the nation. In fact, generally around the coasts. We're working on stuff in the middle of the country. That's one of our projects. So we are now the parent company of Hooked on Driving. Now, anywhere you go, if you've never heard of Everyday Driver, Hooked on Driving will continue as you've known it. We just have some things we want to refine. We want to make it grow further. We love that it is a company we already respected, running great track days, and we want to make it grow. So it is the same company.
Your questions are making me laugh. This is great.
Let's see. There was a question up here, by the way, talking about Anthony says, if you offered me a Singerized E-Type that's overall gorgeous, but it has a diesel, a CVT, and piano black, would I take it? I don't think that's a Singerized E-Type. No one would pick that.
Huh.
No one would decide that's what we're doing. So there we go.
Oh, James Drake is considering an Integra Type S as the only vehicle, but lives in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area. Yes. Would we drive one in the winter, or is he nuts? Yes, drive one in the winter.
Absolutely.
Bredestein Wintrac Pro, and you're done. They're excellent.
They're so good. Zach is asking about our July or September trips. Are you asking which one? You may need to put more comments in there about which one to take. The July trip is our Utah adventure. It is some of the best roads in Utah. honestly, two-thirds, we haven't even opened the registration yet, but two-thirds of every year is people that came the year before. So clearly, it's a fun drive. Mm-hmm. We go down south of here for a full day, and then we do this great loop of some of the best roads in Utah, and every time we do them, we love them. That's a great trip. The September trip, also not open for registration yet, is the road, the Beartooth Highway Road. We're going to drive up there. It's going to be great through Jackson Hole, et cetera. But it's the Beartooth Highway Road that was the starring road of our best road ever video that is currently up with the Lotus and the C8. So both of those are going to be awesome. They're very different trips, but whichever one you can make as far as schedule is concerned, when they go live, you're going to need to sign up quick because I think they're going to go fast.
We are wrapping up for this podcast.
So many.
Thank you guys for all your questions. If we didn't get to it, save it for the next podcast episode. We'll do our best. But please support our sponsors. They support our show and make what we do possible. Mm-hmm. And we only want the best partners and sponsors. Absolutely. So don't forget 10% off your order with the code DRIVER10 for Griot's Garage. And go to PowerStop for all your brake upgrade needs. And Battery Tender, all three of my cars and all of your cars are all on Battery Tenders.
Yes.
You got the wicked one that's like
I didn't even know they made this. It's really cool.
It's like a
five bank.
Yeah.
That because I have cars in a barn. There's a five bank, mm-hmm. and so it's one big bank in the corner with all the lights on one, and then you just have wires running off, and I can glance in the door and know that everybody's doing fine. It's the greatest thing. I didn't even know they made it. It's really
cool. Yes, of course, power clear wipers, and all the cars, one search. Our friends at autotempest.com. Don't forget them when you're searching for what's next. We really appreciate all your questions. We really appreciate your support of the show.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
And of Hooked on Driving, and we're going to update you with more Hooked on mm-hmm. Driving kinds of stuff. And we're, again, reminder, we're going to be at Laguna Seca March 9th and 10th, 2024. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to see you if you're local to the area, or even if you're flying out or passing through.
I mean, our hope is to have a lot of really cool track days. And I want to reiterate, we're so excited to have this company as a new part of what we do, but this does mm-hmm. not mean we become a group that is just about take your car to the racetrack.
I am well
aware that sometimes, depending on where you live in this country, it is becoming a draconian police force that won't let you have any fun. Well, that's what the track is for in some of those areas.
Yeah.
We're spoiled out west. We get a lot of great roads. We get to open it up on all of these fun road trips. So there is that possibility as well. But the reality is, with modern sports cars, and especially you get really good tires, you will never find the edges of your car on a public road. And if you do, it's probably reached a place where it could go very, very wrong. So that's why I like tracking so much. Remember, we are doing multiple Europe trips, and we're probably at a track near you. So we're excited about that. We'll talk about that and everything else going forward. And I wish I could tell you some of the shoots we have coming up, because I was looking at the calendar today and wanting it to be summer so badly, because we've got these great shoots coming.
Winter's cool. It's fun to drive in winter.
But right now we're in this little gasp, kind of a black hole of I want to shoot something really cool, and it's snowing outside, and I'm like, oh, summer needs to come. It's coming. Yeah.
Thank you all for your support. Yeah, we really appreciate it. And cheers, everyone.